Hey there, everybody. You're listening to The Raven's Grove. I'm your host, Dahi, and today we're going to be once again delving into the world of music. More specifically, we're going to be talking about the history and evolution of another of the most divisive, controversial, and in my personal opinion, most interesting forms and genres of music, punk. Now, before we go any further, this episode of The Raven's Grove features the following triggers. We've got sexual references, we've got coarse language, and we've got fascism mentions. So if any of those are in any way an issue for you, please give this episode a miss. Right, now that's out of the way, let's get the show on the road. So, punk rock, as a genre, is can be identified with loud, shouted lyrics. It has got often badly played or chuggy guitar with a low distortion. It's got amazing drumming capabilities, and the lyrics are often anti-establishment, anti-authority, all kinds of anti-stuff in the lyrics. They are renowned as an attitude of rebellion. Punk also, as an aesthetic, has a heavy DIY aspect to it. So, because of that, it's fairly easily identifiable. But, how did punk, both as a form of music and as a subculture, actually come to be? Well, the origins of the term punk actually date back to the 1940s and 50s. It literally meant beginner or novice at the time. But punk music can be traced back to the 1970s, specifically the early 70s, in garage rock scene in the US. Bands like the Standals, the Sonics, and the Seeds were referred to by music critics at the time as punk rock. Like I said, at the time of the early 1970s, the term punk literally meant beginner or novice. It did not have the attitude of rebellion that it would later come to have. Also, it should also be noted that the bands I just mentioned, along with many others from that era, are now classified more as garage rock than actual punk rock. They are, at the time, they were considered punk, but in retrospect, they are not punk at all. So the next step in punk's early development, retroactively named proto-punk, arose in the northeastern US in cities like Detroit, Boston, New York, that area. Bands like the Velvet Underground, the Stooges, MC5, and the Dictators, coupled with shock rock acts like Alice Cooper, laid the foundation for punk in the US. The trans community of New York at the time actually inspired the band the New York Dolls, who led the charges as glam punk developed out of the wider glam rock movement. The drug subculture in Manhattan, especially heroin users, formed the fetal stage of the New York punk scene. Art punk, exemplified by the band Television, grew out of the New York underworld drug addicts and artists shortly after the emergence of glam punk. Shortly after this, Lenny Kaye formed a band with avant-garde poet Patti Smith. Smith's group and her first album, Horses, released in 1975, directly inspired many of the 1970s punk rockers. So this is just one path by which the term migrated to the music we now consider to be punk. Now, the term punk was used to define the emerging movement when the point where it became used to define the emerging movement was when the posters were put up all over New York City saying, "Punk is coming, watch out." Punk magazine would also use the term and help popularize it. And from that point on, punk would emerge as its own separate and distinct subculture with its own identity, ideology, and sense of style. Now, on the other side of the pond, economic recession, coupled with the garbage strike, instilled a lot of dissatisfaction with life among the youth of industrial-era Britain. Punk rock in the UK coincided with the end of post-war consensus politics that actually preceded the rise of Thatcherism, and nearly all British punk bands experienced an attitude of angry social alienation. LA was also facing significantly hard economic hard times, and a collection of art school students and a thriving drug underground caused LA to develop one of the earliest punk scenes on the planet. The original punk subculture was made up of loose affiliations of several groups that emerged at separate times under different circumstances. Now, there was significant cross-pollination between these subcultures, and some were actually quite derivative of others. Most of these subcultures are still around, while others have since gone extinct. These subcultures interacted in various ways to form the original mainline punk subculture, which had a huge degree of variety from region to region. I'm not going to lie. Depending on where you were at the time, you could have vastly different experiences with what punk was. the first ongoing music scene that signed the punk label appeared in New York in 1974 to 1976 and was centered around bands that played regularly at the clubs Max's Kansas City and the notorious CBGB. Now, this had been preceded by a mini underground rock scene at the Mercer Arts Center, which was picking up from the demise of the Velvet Underground, which started in 1971, and featuring the New York Dolls and Suicide helped pave the way, but it came to an abrupt end in 1973 when the building collapsed. The CBGB and Max's scene, including bands such as The Ramones, Television, Blondie, Patti Smith, Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers, Richard Hell and the Voidoids, and Talking Heads. These are some of the biggest bands from that era, and the Ramones especially are one of the biggest punk bands to ever have existed. The punk title was actually applied to all these groups by early 1976, when Punk Magazine first appeared, featuring these bands alongside articles on some of the immediate role models for the new groups, such as Lou Reed, who was actually on the cover of the first issue of Punk, and Patti Smith, who was a cover subject on the second issue. At the same time, a less celebrated but nonetheless highly influential scene had appeared in Ohio, including the Electric Eels, Devo, and Rocket from the Tombs, who in 1975 split into Pere Ubu, I hope I pronounced that right, I honestly don't know, and the Dead Boys. Malcolm McLaren, then manager of the New York Dolls, spotted Richard Hell and decided to bring Hell's look back to Britain. Now, while the London bands may have played a relatively minor role in determining the early punk sound, the London punk scene would come to define and epitomize the punk culture as an icon of rebellion. After a brief stint managing the New York Dolls at the end of their career in the US, Englishman Malcolm McLaren, who I just mentioned, returned to London in May of 75. With Vivienne Westwood, he started a clothing brand called Sex, which is actually a store that was instrumental in creating the radical clothing style associated with punks. Now, Sex as a clothing store was notorious for having, how best to put this, extremely controversial clothing items. Now, by that, I don't mean BDSM wear, though that was worn. I'm talking about t-shirts with extremely graphic and explicit images placed on them. I'm not going to talk about it here because I don't want to, you know, get this episode taken down, but look up the t-shirt, the cowboy shirt, and you'll, well, if you know, you know. Put it that way. So, McLaren also began managing the Swankers, which would actually become the Sex Pistols, and the Sex Pistols were actually named after the shop, believe it or not. The Pistols soon created a strong cult following in London, centered on a clique known as the Bromley Contingent, named after the suburb where many of them had grown up, which followed them around the country. An offsider moment in punk rock's history is a 4th of July 1976 concert by the Ramones at the Roundhouse in London. The Stranglers, another band, were also on the bill. Many of the future leaders in the UK punk rock scene were actually directly inspired by the show, and almost immediately after it, the UK punk scene, well, it kicked in a full swing. By the end of 76, many fans of the Pistols had formed their own bands, including The Clash, Susie and the Banshees, and The Adverts, Generation X, The Slits, and X-Ray Specs. Other UK bands to emerge in this milieu included The Damned, who were actually the first to release a single, the classic New Rose, and other bands such as The Jam, The Vibrators, The Buzzcocks, and the appropriately named London. Now, in December of 1976, the Pistols, the Sex Pistols, The Clash, The Damned, and Johnny Thunders and The Heartbreakers united for the so-called Anarchy Tour, a series of gigs throughout the UK. Many of the gigs were actually cancelled by venue owners after tabloid newspapers and other media seized onto sensational stories regarding the antics of both the bands and their fans. The notoriety of punk rock in the UK was furthered by a televised incident that was widely publicised in the tabloid press. Appearing on a London TV show called Thames Today, guitarist Steve Jones of the Pistols was actually goaded into a verbal altercation by the host Steve Grundy, swearing at him quite violently on live TV in violation of at the time accepted standards of propriety. Now, I'm not going to defend Steve Jones for swearing on TV. Like, I don't work in media. I do this podcast on my own. So I can't really say whether or not he was in the wrong on that. I can tell you that at the time it would have been a big deal. However, I think that some blame in this has to be laid with Bill Grundy, because from what I've read about this incident and from what I've seen on YouTube and other media, Grundy did provoke him. That is not in question. Grundy did definitely provoke Jones into swearing. Was Jones out of line for swearing on TV? Yes. But was he provoked? Were there extenuating circumstances? Absolutely. Anyway, that's just my soapbox rant about that. So getting back to the story. One of the first books about punk rock, which is called The Boy Looked at Johnny by Julie Burchill and Tony Parsons, which was published in December of 1977, declared the punk movement to be already over. The subtitle was The Obituary of Rock and Roll. The title is actually a quote from a lyric from the title track of Patti Smith's 75 album Horses, which I mentioned earlier. In 1977, a second wave of bands emerged heavily influenced by those mentioned above. Some, such as The Misfits from New Jersey, The Exploited, who are from Scotland, GBH from England, Black Flag from LA, Stiff Little Fingers from Northern Ireland, and Crass from Essex, they would go on to influence the move away from the original sound of punk rock and would spawn the hardcore subgenre. I'm going to be talking more about the different subgenres later in this episode, so stay with me. Gradually, over time, punk became more varied and less minimalist, with bands such as The Clash incorporating other musical influences such as reggae and rockabilly and jazz into their music, which personally I think, I don't listen to a lot of punk music, but I do enjoy it, and I have to say I like some of The Clash's later stuff, so it depends on what song you're listening to really. In the UK, punk interacted with the Jamaican reggae and ska subcultures, and the reggae influence is very evident in much of the music of The Clash and The Slits, for example, and personally, I really enjoy that stuff. By the end of the 1970s, punk had spawned the two-tone ska revival movement, which I'll also be talking about later, including bands such as The Beat, who were known in the US as The English Beat, and other bands such as The Specials, Madness, and The Selector. The message of punk remained subversive, countercultural, rebellious, and politically outspoken. Punk rock often deals with topics such as problems facing society, oppression of the lower classes and minorities, the threat of a nuclear war, or it delineated the individual's personal problems, such as being unemployed or having particular emotional and or mental issues such as depression. Punk is a message to society that all is not well and all are not equal. And while it is thought that the style of punk from the 70s had a decline in the 80s, many, many subgenres branched off in their own interpretation. Like I said, I'll be talking much more about that in detail later, but for instance, anarcho-punk became a style in its own right, and Nazi punk arose in the radical right wing of punk. As of this recording, there is still a thriving punk rock scene in various subgenres in the US, Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, most of Asia, and Africa, and mainland Europe. It's a very widespread culture. Now, whether or not that culture is as popular as, say, metal music is a different topic, and I don't have enough information to weigh in on that part. What I will say is that from everything I've read and all the bands I've listened to, punk is certainly not dead. It is still around. Now, as I was saying earlier, one thing that really defines punk as a culture is the core values of nonconformity, anti-authority, anti-corporations, and a real emphasis on a do-it-yourself attitude. Punk fashion, is quite varied, but generally includes stuff like ripped or torn clothing, often held together by pins or stitches, leather jackets, combat boots, particularly Doc Martens, they're very popular, crazy, and or in my opinion, very, very cool hairstyles such as Liberty spikes, mohawks, and brightly colored and dyed hair. And it also features tattoos, piercings, and other forms of body modification. Now, regardless of what you think of body modification, tattoos, and piercings, it cannot be denied that that is a crucial part of the punk look. Now, the main difference between punks and metalheads, in terms of aesthetic, in my opinion, is that as a general rule, punks might have more colorful hair, more spikes, and the patches on their clothing are generally leaned to be more political in basis. Metalheads, on the other hand, might have longer hair that may or may not be uncolored, as along with patches that tend to be less political and they're more band-affiliated. The spikes, you can encounter spikes on metalhead jackets. That being said, there is actually considerable overlap between metalheads and punks. Now, the early 1970s proto-punk scene had an influence on the development of heavy metal. Alice Cooper, for example, was a forerunner of the fashion and music of both punk and metal subcultures. Motorhead, since their first album release in 1977, have enjoyed continued popularity in the punk scene, and their now sadly deceased frontman Lemmy, who many guitarists and metalheads hold up to a near godlike status, was actually a big fan of punk rock. Genres such as metalcore, grindcore, and crossover thrash were hugely influenced by punk rock and heavy metal. the new wave of British heavy metal, which includes bands like Judas Priest, Dio, Iron Maiden, for instance, Saxon, they influenced the UK 82 style bands like Discharge, and hardcore punk was a primary influence on thrash metal bands such as Metallica, Megadeth, and Slayer. The early 1990s grunge subculture, which is famous for spawning bands like Nirvana, Mother Love Bone, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, that was actually a fusion of punk anti-fashion ideals and metal-influenced guitar sounds. However, hardcore punk and grunge both developed in part as reactions against the heavy metal music that was popular in the 1980s, by which I mean glam metal. Now, I actually talk a bit more about this reaction in the episodes on metal culture, which are Metal a History and Metal a Revised History. So if you want to know more about the evolution of heavy metal and how it influenced and was reaction against glam metal, give those episodes a listen. And yeah, I hope you enjoy them. They're one of my favorites to record. So now that we know all about that, let's talk about some of the different subgenres of punk. So first up, we have Afropunk. Now, Afropunk refers to the participations of African Americans, or people of African descent, in the punk and alternative music cultures. Afropunks represent a majority in the punk culture in predominantly black regions of the world that are burgeoning punk communities, such as in parts of Africa. Now, there are many punk rock bands with black members, and several with lineups that are entirely black. So, yeah, that's actually pretty cool. Anarcho-punk, which is one of my personal favorites, is punk rock that promotes anarchism. The term anarcho-punk is sometimes applied exclusively to bands that were part of the 1970s, 1980s anarcho-punk movement in the UK. However, some use the term to refer to any punk music with anarchist lyrical content. Now, generally speaking, in terms of politics, anarcho-punk is hardcore left-wing. Like, they're not communist, they're even further left-wing, they're full-on anarchist. And for me, I personally, well, I agree with a lot of their message, and I really enjoy their music. Like, if you're after one that's really good, I'd recommend Reagan Youth. They are a band from the 1980s, they are classic anarcho-punk, and they are honestly one of my favorite punk bands, so I give them a listen if you're interested in this stuff. Just be warned, they're not for everyone, so just bear that in mind. So next up, we have art punk. Art punk, otherwise known as avant punk, refers to punk and rock and post-punk music of an experimental bent, or with connections to art school, the art world, or avant-garde. This is kind of punk rock's equivalent to prog metal. Like, if you know Dream Theater, that's the classic prog metal band. This is like punk's version of that. Now, next up, we have Christian punk. Otherwise known as Christ punk, if it's called in reference to Christ punk, it's punk rock with some degree of Christian lyrical content. Now, given the edginess of punk and some of the subgenres, such as hardcore punk, many bands who identify as Christian punk have actually been rejected by the Christian music industry, and due to the message and nature of Christian punk, many traditional punks actually ridicule it. Now, my own feelings about Christianity notwithstanding, I'm on the fence about this one. Like, I have a real beef with Christianity for personal reasons I won't go into here, but I feel like they should be allowed to have a voice, but I'm not sure punk is the right genre for Christian music. Same thing with Christian metal. I get that it's someone expressing their religious beliefs, and I'm not going to stop them from doing that. But at the same time, I'm not sure if punk or metal is the right genre for Christian groups. Like, for instance, like, look at, what's it called, Disturbed or Skillet. Those two are famously Christian rock bands. Now, if they want to talk about Christian stuff, Christian mythology has got a ton of cool stuff to talk about. But if you're going on about how Jesus will save you in a metal song or a punk song, that's going to cause some lyrical dissonance. That's all I'm saying. It doesn't really fit the style of music. So, yeah, that's just my own personal opinion. So, yeah. Anyways, next up we have crust punk, also known as crust or stenchcore. It's a subgenre that evolved in the early 1980s in England, and has songs with dark and pessimistic lyrics that linger on political and social ills or injustices. Crust punk is partly defined by its bassy and dirty sound. It's often played at a very fast tempo with occasional slow sections. Vocals are usually quite guttural and may be grunted, growled, or screamed. Now, while the term was first associated with Hellbastard, the band Amabix has been described as the originators of the style, along with the bands Discharge and Antisect. Next up, we have death rock. Death rock is a subgenre of punk incorporating horror elements and spooky atmospherics. It emerged on the west coast of the US in the early 1980s. Death rock uses simple chords, echoing guitars, and a very prominent bass. The drumming emphasizes repetitive post-punk beats usually within a 4/4 time signature. To create the atmosphere, scratching guitars are sometimes used. Lyrics can vary, but are typically introspective and surreal, and deal with dark themes of isolation, gloom, disillusionment, loss, life, death, etc. Askan the style, which varies from harsh and dark to upbeat, melodic, and tongue-in-cheek. Death rock lyrics and other musical stylistic elements also often incorporate the themes of campy horror and sci-fi films, which in turn lead some bands to adopt elements of rockabilly and surf rock. A good example of this genre would be The Misfits. Next up we have egg punk. It's a mostly internet-based genre that started in Northwest Indiana and is heavily influenced by Devo and a hatred for the us-versus-them mentality of the emerging chain punk bands. Egg punk is satirical, danceable, energetic, and deeply cynical of the so-called edgy and hardcore serious approach to music. It utilizes cheap synthetics or synthesizers, and minimal recording and mixing, and a very heavy dependence on a DIY artwork and style. So, yeah. Next up, we have garage punk. It's punk rock heavily influenced by garage rock. Other influences include soul music, beat music, surf rock, power pop, and psychedelic. Now, often it uses lo-fi aesthetics over catchy melodies. There's really not much to talk about with this one. It's basically what it says on the tin. Glam punk is next. It's also called glitter punk. It fuses elements of glam rock and punk rock. It's commonly reflected in images and style. There's really not much information I could find about the actual, like, definite definitions of style or in music. It's highly individualized. So, yeah, just be aware of that going in. Next up, we have hardcore punk. Hardcore punk, otherwise known as hardcore music, is generally faster and more aggressive than earlier punk rock. Hardcore only originated in the late 1970s and was heavily involved with the rise of indie record labels in the 1980s and with DIY aesthetics in the underground music scenes. It's since influenced a number of music genres which have experienced mainstream success, such as alt rock, grunge, alt metal, metalcore, thrash metal, and post-hardcore. If you're after a good band from that genre, I would recommend the band Black Flag. Or the Henry Rollins Band, which is actually a offshoot with the frontman from Black Flag. When Black Flag broke up, he formed the Henry Rollins Band. If the name Henry Rollins is familiar to you, that's because he was in Sons of Anarchy Season 2, and he also did the voice of the bad guy Zahir in Avatar Legend of Korra. He's an amazingly talented actor, he's a great singer, very funny guy in terms of stand-up comedy. He's a genuinely cool guy, I really respect him. So, horror punk. Now, this is actually what I mean when I'm talking about The Misfits. Horror punk mixes gothic and punk rock sounds with morbid or violent imagery and lyrics, which are often influenced by horror films or sci-fi B-movies. The genre is similar to, and sometimes overlaps with, death rock, though horror punk is typically more aggressive and melodic than death rock. Some horror punk bands dress up in black clothes, skeleton costumes, and full skull face paint. Now, I would personally put Misfits as a hybrid between horror punk and death rock, but that's just my opinion. If you have a different opinion about that band, that's cool. I'm not gonna argue with you on that one. You'd probably know more than me. Now for one that is not my favorite, Nazi punk. Nazi punk is punk rock that promotes neo-Nazism, and sadly, this is actually a quite vocal minority in punk. The term Nazi punk can also refer to a neo-Nazi as part of some punk subculture. Rock Against Communism is actually a related genre, and the bands Screwdriver and Skullhead have actually been associated with the genre. It is thankfully a minority, as most punk is, while it's very political, it's usually left-wing, but sadly there is a sizable minority who promote Nazi punk. And I just want to actually take a moment about this, to talk about this to my fans. If you're listening to this and you in any way approve of or associate with neo-Nazism, white supremacism, or fascism, please stop listening to my podcast. Don't interact with me. Don't listen to my podcast. Don't try and say you're a fan. I do not want you listening to my stuff. I do not want you anywhere near my products. Okay? I do not approve of Nazism. I do not approve of right-wing fascism. I do not approve of white supremacy. I am anti that stuff in the extreme. I actually have actually got family who died at the hands of the Nazis. So if you are any way associate with neo-Nazism, fascism, or white supremacy, just don't go near my stuff. Okay? I'm warning you now. If I find out that you are and you are still listening to my stuff, I will be very, very cross. So that's all I'm saying about that. I do not approve of it in any way, but sadly it is a part of punk rock, and so I'm trying to be objective here. So thankfully, returning to one that's a little bit less violent is the band Oi. Now, Oi is spelled O-I with an exclamation mark, and it is a working class street level subgenre of punk rock that originated in the UK in the 70s. It was created with the goal of uniting punks, skinheads, and other working class subcultures, and in fairness, it does a pretty good job of that. So yeah, not bad. Next up, we have peace punk. Peace punk is a punk genre of punk rock with anti-war lyrics. The lyrics in peace punk advocate non-violence and offer include messages of equality, freedom, animal liberation, veganism, ecology, human rights, and anarchism. The lyrics are often against racism, sexism, homophobia, war, poverty, capitalism, the government, and the military, and most peace punk bands are also anarcho-punk bands, which is one of the reasons why I like that genre. Next up, we have punk pathetic. Now, that's pathetic spelt in the French style with P-A-T-H-E-T-I-Q-U-E. It's also known as fun punk, and it's a subgenre of British punk rock, principally active during 1980 to 1982. And then it involves humor and working class cultural themes. Musically, it's very closely related to and a considerable crossover with the Oi subculture. Next up, we have queercore. Queercore is a subgenre of punk that emerged in the 1980s after the publication of the zine G-Days in Toronto. Now, as a genre, queercore explores issues of gender identity, gender expression, and sexuality, and festivals such as Queeruption feature music, art, film, performance art, and a DIY aesthetic. In my opinion, it's pretty cool. Next up, we have Riot Girl. Now, girl in this is spelled G-R-R-R-L, like as in girl, an animal noise, it's like a growl. Riot Girl is a feminist punk indie rock subgenre, and it's also a subculture whose popularity peaked in the 1990s. The subculture features elements such as female-centric bands, costumes, concerts, and festivals, collectives, support groups, workshops, self-defense courses, activism, and fanzines. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here and just say something that I personally think is really cool. I identify as male. Right, I was born biologically male. I am cisgender. I'm not denying that. I am very comfortable in my gender. But I think that Riot Girl as a subculture is seriously cool. All right, I really do. Like, this is a feminist punk rock subgenre. Is basically taking the idea of like punk saying, you know what, there is messed up stuff going on in the world. We're not going to stand for this. And it's putting it in a terminology about gender equality. And I personally think that that is a really admirable sentiment. It's something I can really get behind, and it's something I fully support and endorse. Alright, I'm not going to deny that people who are biologically male have done some pretty atrocious things to women in the past. I'm not going to deny that, and sometimes when I read about this stuff, I feel ashamed to be a man. But I know that not all men are like this. I know it's a common phrase. I get that. But honestly, Riot Girl and feminism in general, I am a massive fan of. I don't support one gender being more than the other, by the way. I'm supporting total gender equality and everything. So because of that, I think Riot Girl is a absolutely brilliant idea. I think it's amazing music. I think that the culture is really cool. I fully support it. I may not be a part of it, but I fully support and endorse it. So yeah, that's just my soapbox rant for the day. Next up, we have skate punk. Skate punk, also known as skate thrash, surf punk, or skatecore, is a subgenre of punk that derived from hardcore. Skate punk often describes the sound of melodic hardcore bands from the 1990s with an aggressive sound and similar sounding modern bands. Skate videos have traditionally featured this style of punk rock. It's quite aggressive, but if you played something like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, more than likely you will have heard some of these bands. Next up we have street punk. Street punk is a working class subgenre of punk rock which emerged in the early 1980s, partly as a rebellion against perceived artistic pretensions of the first wave of British punk. Street punk emerged from the Oi genre and then continued to go beyond the confines of the original Oi style. It's like Oi but ramped up to 11. So, yeah. Next up we have one that I personally think is really cool, which is Taqwa Core. I hope I pronounced that right. I don't speak Arabic. Taqwa Core is a subgenre of punk rock dealing with Islam and its cultures, which is originally conceived in Michael Muhammad Knight's 2003 novel, The Taqwa Course. The name is a portmanteau of hardcore and the Arabic word taqwa, which usually is translated as piety or the quality of being God-fearing. While Muslim punk rock dates back to at least the 1979 founding of the British band Alien Culture, Knight's novel was instrumental in encouraging the growth of a contemporary North American Muslim punk movement. Taqwa Core bands often challenge Islam as it exists and promote a very liberal progressive agenda. Personally, I think this is absolutely fantastic because I'm not one of those people that think that only certain groups should have access to certain types of music. I mean, regardless of what I said with the Christian rock band, I fully support anyone who's got any religious leaning. If you are religious, that's cool. I'm not going to stop you. I think that's awesome that you have that level of faith. I may not agree with the religion or some of the beliefs you hold, but I will fully support your right to hold those beliefs. And so Taqwa Core for me is amazing because it's taking let's be honest here, a minority that is treated very, very badly by a lot of the mainstream media. I mean, look at the amount of media that says that Muslims are all terrorists. It's not the case at all. And they're saying, you know what? We have a right to experience punk. And I think that's amazing. I honestly think it's absolutely incredible. And finally, in the punk subgenres, we have Trall Punk. It's a genre of punk known for fast drumming, a melodic sound, and often very politically orientated lyrics. It emerged from the late 1980s Swedish hardcore punk scene, and is still common to this day. So those are all genres of punk as a core music style. Now, how about we talk about some of the other genres of punk fused with other genres of music? So, let's get into it. First up, we have two-tone. It's a musical genre created in England in the late 1970s by fusing elements of ska punk, punk rock, rocksteady, reggae, and new wave. The two-tone sound was developed by young musicians in the city of Coventry in the West Midlands in England, and the genre is the precursor of the third wave punk ska scene in the 1980s and 1990s. Ska is obviously not that common nowadays, but it was very common back in those days. Next up, we have anti-folk, or otherwise known as unfolk. It's a subgenre of folk music and punk rock that seeks to subvert the earnestness of politically charged 1960s folk music. The defining characteristics of anti-folk are actually quite difficult to identify, as it varies wildly from one artist to the next. Nonetheless, the music tends to sound very raw or experimental. It also generally mocks the perceived seriousness and pretension with the established mainstream music scene. Next up, we have probably my favorite style of punk rock, and that is Celtic punk. Celtic punk is a punk rock style fused with influences from Celtic music. Often the bands include Celtic instruments such as the bagpipes or the Elan pipes, the fiddle, the tin whistle, the accordion, the mandolin, or the banjo. Celtic punk bands often played covers of traditional Irish or Scottish folk songs, as well as their own original compositions. And if you're interested in this style, here are four bands for you to try out. First one, Dropkick Murphys. They're based in Boston. If you've seen the film The Departed, you will know this band. They are in the soundtrack to that. After that, we have Flogging Molly. They're originally from Chicago. They're excellent. The Real Mackenzies is the third one on the list. They're founded and located in Vancouver. They're more Scottish-based. The other three on this list are more Irish-focused, whereas the Real Mackenzies are more Scottish-focused, which reflects the Canadian element. And then you got the Rumjacks. Now, the Rumjacks are rare because they're one of the only punk rock bands I know of. They're actually Celtic punk. They're from Australia. Immediately, they're from Sydney and I'm from Melbourne, so there's a bit of a rivalry, but I will not deny they have amazing music. I'd highly recommend giving them a listen. So, all four of those bands are absolutely fantastic, so give them a listen if you want to know more. I personally recommend we're dropping Murphy's shipping up to Boston. Now we're dropping Fogging Molly's Devil's Dance Floor, Real McKenzie's with My Head Is Filled with Music, and the Rumjacks Irish Pub Song. So those are my four recommendations to get started. They are amazing quality music. I hope you enjoy them. Those are four of my favorite bands, so give them a try. Next up, and related to Celtic punk, we have Scottish Gaelic punk. Scots Gaelic punk is a subgenre of punk rock in which all the bands sing some or all their music in Scots Gaelic, which is a Celtic language. The Gaelic punk scene is in part an affirmation of the value of minority languages and cultures, and Gaelic punk bands express political views, especially those related to anarchism and environmentalism. I personally think that that is absolutely incredible. Like, I'm a language nerd going back since I was 4 years old. So I am a massive fan of this as an idea. And plus, it's Scots Gaelic, which is one of my favorite languages to listen to. This is an amazing idea. I love this idea to bits. All right, so next up we have Chicano punk, or Chicano punk. Chicano is music by punk bands of Mexican-American ethnicity, and the subgenre originated in Chicago's Pilsen and Little Village neighborhoods in the mid-1990s. It has since spread to the LA punk scene and is quite popular there. I also think this is amazing because it's another minority group, in the case of California, a majority group, that is actually getting attention and respect from a subculture. I think this is amazing. So next up, we have Spanish raw punk. Spanish raw punk is punk music fused with a combination of Spanish punk and D-beat. The genre is also quite rare and underground due to the level of demonstration. Often bands add some kind of crude lyrics in which they protest against police brutality, the religion, and the government. I don't actually know much about this. I'm going to be honest. I have very little information about this. But as a whole, I think this is a fantastic idea. Next up, we have melodic punk, which is... I got very little information. It just said it's a kind of punk that is melodic and upbeat. It does not have any examples of bands. I know next to nothing about this. So if you know more about this band, please just let me know, okay? Next up, we have dark cabaret. Dark cabaret may be a simple description of the theme and mood of a cabaret performance, but more recently has come to define a particular musical genre which draws on the aesthetics of the decadent, risque, German Weimar-era cabarets, burlesque, and vaudeville shows with the stylings of post-1970s Gotham punk music. So, yeah, that's kind of cool. Latin punk is a subgenre of, it's the next one up, it's a subgenre influenced by the Latin American rock and Espanol, Latino punk, ska, and regional musical genres such as the bossa nova, samba, cumbia, and boleros, along with others. Although originally a subgenre born in Latin America and Spain, the Latin punk subgenre has grown internationally, providing Latin rock musicians abroad with a connection to their roots. I honestly think that's fantastic. Next up, we have cowpunk. Cowpunk, otherwise known as country punk, combines punk rock music with country music in sound, subject matter, and attitude and style. The term has been applied to several bands that play a fast form of southern rock. So, that's kind of cool. Next up, we have dance punk. Dance punk, otherwise known as disco punk, funk punk, or indie dance, it mixes punk rock music with disco, funk, and electro music. Emerging in the late 1970s, it is influenced by the post-punk and no-wave movements, and more recently, the post-punk revival and art-punk movements. Next up, folk punk. Folk punk combines elements of folk music and punk rock. Its subgenres include Celtic punk and gypsy punk, and most folk punk musicians perform their own compositions in the style of punk rock, but using the acoustic guitar and double bass, and often adding traditional folk instruments such as mandolins, accordions, banjos, and violins. This actually has an additional advantage because you don't need electronic power to play the instruments, and so it's often seen in indie and folk festivals. Honestly, I think it's a great idea because you're getting some lesser-known instruments and combining it with a really unique style, and you don't need electrics to play the instruments, so that's really cool. Next up, we have gypsy punk. Gypsy punk mixes traditional Romani music, klezmer, or Eastern European music along with punk rock. It typically features violin, acoustic guitar, accordion, and tenor saxophone alongside electric guitar, bass, and drums. I also think that the style is really cool to listen to. I really enjoy listening to it. So, yeah, give it a try. Pop punk, otherwise known as punk pop and quite a few other names, is a fusion genre that combines elements of punk rock with pop music or power pop, which has varying degrees of that stuff. It's not clear when the term pop punk was first used, but pop-influenced punk rock has been around since the mid to late 1970s. This includes bands such as Green Day, some Blink-182, Sum 41, those guys. Those are considered to be pop punk. They're not hardcore punk. Green Day is kind of on the fence, because some of their early stuff can be considered full-on punk, but it really depends on what era you're talking about and what songs. Next up, we have punk blues, which is a combination of blues, rock, punk rock, and actual blues music. It is also heavily influenced by garage rock. Unfortunately, I do not have any bands to recommend for that one because I don't know much about it. Punk jazz is next up, and it describes the amalgamation of elements of the jazz tradition, usually freeform jazz and jazz fusion of the 1960s and 1970s, with the instrumentation or conceptual heritage of punk rock and hardcore punk. I think that's awesome. Next up, we have punk metal, which is one of my favorite genres. Punk metal infuses elements of heavy metal music with punk rock. The fusion often involves extreme metal genres and hardcore punk. Bands described as punk metal include Amen, Motorhead, who I've already mentioned, Warfare, Corrosion of Conformity, Manic Street Preachers, English Dogs, Sum 41, and L7. Next up, we have rapcore. Rapcore infuses elements of punk rock, metal, hip-hop, rap, and sometimes funk. Notable bands include The Transplants, Zebrahead, and Dog Eat Dog. Next up, we have ska punk and ska core. Ska punk is a musical fusion genre that fuses ska and punk rock, often playing down the former ska punk's R&B roots. Ska core is a subgenre of ska punk, blending ska with hardcore punk. The more punk-influenced style often includes faster tempos to guitar distortion, on-beat punk-style interludes, usually the chorus, and nasal, gruff, or shouted vocals. The more ska-influenced style develops a more developed instrumentation and a cleaner vocal and musical sound. Next up, we have synth-punk, otherwise known as electropunk. It's a genre of music that combines elements of electronic music and punk rock. A number of bands use electronics and ska and punk music. It combined, although the methods and resulting sounds, they vary quite a bit depending on the band. This has even led to the creation of more genres such as digital hardcore, depending on what influences you have. Finally, we come to grindcore. Grindcore is an extreme fusion genre of heavy metal and hardcore punk that originated in the 1980s. Drawing inspiration from abrasive sounding musical styles such as thrashcore, punk, crust punk, hardcore punk, extreme metal, and industrial metal. Grindcore is considered a more noise-filled style of hardcore punk, while using hardcore's traditional characteristics such as heavily distorted down-tuned guitars, grinding overdriven bass, high-speed tempo, blast beats, and vocals consisting of growls, shouts, and hyper shrieks. Anyway, that's all for today, folks. Thanks for listening to The Raven's Grove. I've been Dahi. You've been awesome. I'll talk to you next episode. See ya.